If you didn't know, that was the sound of a traditional meditation gong. And if you work for a corporation, or a public institution, or if you have health insurance, or if you look at the magazines at the checkout stand at the grocery store, you've probably heard of mindfulness. And not just as a religion, but what some have dubbed MIC mindfulness, a workplace stress reduction strategy. And I have Guy Berliner on today to talk with me about mindfulness in corporate America. But also, hopefully, if we have time, mindfulness as a factor in social and political movements. Thanks for coming on the show, Guy.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
So could you say a little bit about your background with meditation and social activism, and we can kind of talk about our shared perspective on bringing them together?
Yeah, I've been involved in a variety of social movements over the years, and I guess I got my first introduction to meditation and Zen and Buddhism in my 20s, once upon a time reading Alan Watts. And at some point I stumbled upon Roshi Philip Kaplow, who said something in his Three Pillars of Zen to the effect that Alan Watts was the worst thing that ever happened to Buddhism and meditation, because it made it sound like all you had to do was just read a book. And then it dawned on me, well, maybe I actually need to try this meditation practice out. But the other factor I'd say with social movements is I've noticed over the years that, you know, they tend to attract a lot of angry people because there's a lot of things to be angry about. But anger only takes us so far. And I've noticed that it can be toxic. And, you know, I kind of combined that with my meditation practice, thinking, well, there must be some way that we can bring these two together in a productive dialogue.
Well, I've been meditating for some years, but I didn't really go on a long retreat until just this last year when I had a baby and had time off to do that. My experience with it was, you know, always kind of intellectual, even though I would sit and follow my breath. I had not done it long enough to really make a discernible change that I saw associated with the practice, but it still inspired me. And when I finally had the opportunity to go to a meditation course where I very intensively and extensively practiced meditation, I was shaken to my core, but also brought together. And now there's been a number of articles and radio pieces coming out about mindfulness as a corporate tool for making workers able to continue to do their work, at least keep productivity levels at where they are, if not increase them. Could you say a bit about these techniques and how they cut away from the larger tradition that mindfulness comes from?
Yeah, I think that as with anything, a tool or a technique can be wrested from its origins and applied to something that is novel and not necessarily what the original intentions were for that tool or that technique. And the same thing happens with other religious traditions, right? With Christianity, we see that there are people who espouse this prosperity theology, which is almost turning the teachings of Jesus on their head. There is danger of anything kind of being perverted for self-aggrandizement, for example. And there is, I think, a danger that, you know, we've been discussing with mindfulness techniques being kind of divorced from the bigger context of the society and of an authentic practice, because authentic spiritual practices, meditation practices, are not completely divorced from everybody else. They're not completely inward, and they involve interacting with other human beings.
Though before we say more about that context, we probably should just say a little bit about the technique, because that, if it is not the whole, it's the starting point.
Yes. When we talk about mindfulness, we're talking about awareness. And by awareness, we mean just that. We mean being aware of this moment, my bodily sensations.
And that's where it really starts. It starts Yes. with our sensations. It's why the breath is the choice. It is it's constantly producing a sensation for us to practice with.
Yes.
That by becoming aware of our bodily sensations and really our embodiment, we are able to integrate our awareness of the wider environment of both what is happening outside of and inside of us, and that awareness, you know, it starts with something simple and we build it. We all have awareness, but we don't necessarily practice using it.
That's right. I mean, we take it for granted all of the time. And it's unfortunate because particularly in our society, I think this is one of the points that I'm really troubled by, is that we are in danger of a lot of sensory overload. There are too many sources of stimuli, and when you are overstimulated, your senses are really deadened.
And if your senses are deadened, then you're less able to pay attention and stay on task.
Yes.
And that's where the corporate response with mindfulness comes from. It's them recognizing in this practical way that our workers are bombarded with sensations, with demands, with not enough resources. And so the corporate promotion of mindfulness is about getting workers to be able to show up for work and to serve the interests of the corporation, the business, the institution.
Yes, and Philip Kaplow, in that book, Three Pillars of Zen, he talks about the various sort of stages of Zen, you know, and the lowest level, the first stage that he mentions is what Bompu Zen. So Bompu Zen is exactly what you're talking about. It's applying meditation, following the breath, and with no other aspiration aside from, like you say, not being so strung out, enjoying some benefits of serenity, of greater well-being physically and emotionally. And there's nothing wrong with that,
it's
right?
It's a place you start. You know, learn to take care of yourself, and once you have found more equanimity, then you are able to work with others, building that equanimity interpersonally then.
That's right. I mean, it can lead to a whole world way beyond what your initial aspirations are.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, you know, in the Three Pillars of Zen that I mentioned, the master that Philip Kaplow took, it's a series of interviews with this Zen master, and he asked people at the beginning, what are your aspirations? You know, and so the aspirations can be everything from, you know, I want to improve my own physical and emotional well-being, all the way to I want to save all sentient beings, you know, and anything in between. But the possibilities are really awe-inspiring. You can start with this germ of purely self-regarding desire for your own personal well-being, and you can move from there to the aspiration to save sentient beings. And that happens to a lot of people. I can attest to that experience myself. I mean, you know, when I started practicing Zen, I didn't have particularly awe-inspiring aspirations, but there's a lot in Zen and in Buddhism that can make your life a lot more meaningful beyond just, you know, feeling more relaxed. The point, though, about mindfulness practice is dropping any kind of attachment to any, you know, goal, right? You can't go into the practice that we're talking about with the idea that you're going to achieve X, Y, and Z. It's not political, right? I mean, we can't expect any set of desirable things out of it, right? But ironically, what we can realize out of it is something incredibly precious and liberatory.
And that experience is what drives us to want to share that experience, which is what then becomes the propelling factor in engaging with the external world.
I think potentially it is. I think in, you know, the ideal circumstances, that can be, and that often is what happens. People have this experience and they sometimes have a sense of elation and a deep desire to share it with others.
Unfortunately, we don't have enough time to get more into how mindfulness meditation can factor into social and indeed political movements for positive, progressive social change.
I'm Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour. Thank you, Guy Berliner, for coming on to talk about meditation as corporate control and for social change.
Thanks for having me, Joe.